Hey, welcome. You're listening to My Teeth Need Attention after, you know, kind of a little gap. Had a busy summer. Real quick, in the background, you're listening to Eric Arn from a live CD he put out. But anyway, yeah, the busy summer. Had the Carbon Fest in early August. Did my usual yearly day tour. Been working on a ton of releases, including today. Well, today is September 5th. I don't know when you're listening to it, but this is the official release day of The Sun Is Not True, Carbon's 300th release. It's a compilation LP featuring a slew of people. So if you haven't grabbed one of those, I encourage you to do so. You can grab it on the Carbon Bandcamp site or the Carbon website. So carbonrecords.com or carbon-records.bandcamp.com. But enough of that. Today is also the release of Gwennifer Raymond's brand new record. I didn't have it in front of me. It's called Last Night I Heard the Dog Star Bark. It is on the We Are Busybodies label. I think they're in Toronto. She lives in England right now. And I bring that up because today's interview is with Gwennifer. It's a short interview. We talked kind of a while ago. So we refer to, you know, the release coming up in a month or so, but, you know, it's coming out today. It's amazing. I was at my local record store. I walked in. They happened to get copies. It was late yesterday, and they put on a turntable, and everyone in the store, who aren't always in consensus when it comes to, you know, American primitive guitar playing, were all blown away. They were all just kind of looking at the turntable like, holy crap. And I concur. It's really great. So I'm going to play a track from that after the interview. Before the interview, I'm going to play a track from one of her older records. She's got two records and a 7-inch on Thompson Square, and I think the 7-inch is available. The two LPs are out of print. You can usually find them on Discogs. They go for a little bit of money. So hopefully at some point maybe they get reissued in some way. But I'm going to play a track from Strange Lights Over Garth Mountain. And then I have the 7-inch too. I'll probably play a track from the 7-inch, then we'll do the interview. Or I'll do the 7-inch after the interview, and then I'll play a track from the brand new record too, and I encourage you to go check that out. I know Red Eye Distribution in the U.S. is handling the label, so there should be plenty of copies floating around the U.S. right now. So if you're in the U.S., it should be relatively painless to get, given all the tariff crap that we're going through and having such a hard time getting records from other countries. No fault of theirs. So yeah, let's get to it. We're going to listen to a track from her older record, then we'll listen to the interview, and then a couple tracks after that. I want to thank Gwennifer for giving me her time and, you know, taking a cold call from me, because she didn't know me from Adam. And she was great to talk to, so let's get to it. You're listening to My Teeth Need Attention. Listen, enjoy. Thank you. Well, nice to meet you.
Well, yeah, very nice to meet you also. How are you doing?
Yeah, so where you're living in, are you in Brighton, England right now, or yeah, you're
Right.
living.
Exactly. In the flat.
Did you grew up though in Wales?
Yeah, I grew up in Tafswell, which is like a sort of little village just north of Cardiff, the capital.
Okay. I know zero about Wales, as
Okay.
probably most people you meet too, especially Americans. I apologize.
It's all good. Yeah, it's all right. It's a nice place. You should come visit.
How long, when did you move to, where did you grow up in Wales? Did you stay there for most of your childhood? Or?
Yeah, I was there for a long time. I think I must have moved when I was like 26 or so for, for work, basically. Yeah.
And you moved to Brighton, or?
No, I moved to a hellhole called Horsham. It's this very boring kind of old market town, not too far from so, like I don't know, 30 miles or a bit less probably from Brighton. But yeah, as soon as I kind of could feasibly move to Brighton, I did, because
Yeah.
it's a much nicer place to live.
Brighton's a pretty big city,
It's
or?
not. It's not a big city. It's only, it's kind of small. I mean, especially by American standards, it's like 300, 400,000 people.
Oh,
But
okay.
it's a nice city. It's very, it's a, close to London, but it's, a very kind of cool, big music scene, lots of record stores, lots of coffee shops, lots of, good places to eat. It's kind of like it's kind of the hipster capital of Britain, basically.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I've known Dylan Nyokas. Do you know Dylan and Karen Constance? I don't know if you know them.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
They're like the weirdo noise kind of underground scene. Been running Chocolate Monk forever, this label. And
Yeah.
yeah, they would come over and play with Pengo, the band, the one band of man. And Pengo's been over to the UK a bunch of times. I never made those trips. I was having kids around that time, so I couldn't really tour. But yeah, they Pengo played definitely Brighton and other parts. Yeah.
Oh, there's a good scene for all that stuff in Brighton, and we've got kind of a lot of slightly more experimental venues, and we've had Spirit of Gravity, which is like a very long-running sort of drone and experimental. It's not quite an open mic, but it's kind of like an open mic night, a monthly night running for donkey's years. So this, yeah, it's a very well-established kind of experimental music scene in Brighton.
That's awesome. What do you do for a living? Do you do music, or do
No,
you survive off of?
I work in video games. I'm a technical director of a studio that we do audio, specifically audio for computer games.
Oh, wow. Nice. I'm a software engineer by trade. That's what I do.
Go. Yeah. Ditto
Yeah.
then.
When did you start playing music? Was it at an early age? Was it guitar?
Yeah, well, I mean, so I picked up the guitar when I was about, I guess I heard Nirvana for the first time, and when I was about eight, and then yeah, I asked for a guitar for, I always forget if it was for my birthday or if it was for Christmas, but it was for one of those, and then I started playing guitar from that age. Yeah, oh
Electric,
no,
well, electric, or
oh yeah, definitely,
yeah,
yeah.
of course.
I was really, it was the it was like there was like a little initiative on going on. It was in primary school. So I think you could get some free lessons of learn how to play the guitar, and every other kid there had that, that kind of standard, almost like it's not a rental, but kind of like a rental, like slightly classical style acoustic guitar. And I sort of insisted on, I had this cherry red Squire Strat. It's like, this is what I shall play.
It's exactly, I think, what my son has in his room right now.
Yeah, exactly. The Squires are good, decent guitars, man. You can't go,
Yeah.
they're sometimes the Squires are better than the Fenders.
Yeah, I mean, especially nowadays too, like the Squire brand is way, it's crazy the quality of it. Like when I started playing in college, so late 90, 91 I started. And all the knockoff brands at that point were mostly junk. But nowadays, yeah, they're way better. Drums the same way. Like I kind of was a drummer back then, but now I'm a drummer. Like that's my main instrument. And you buy the lower level things and they're great. It's really just like the small little details of it that are, make the higher end more expensive.
With drums, it was always, I was always told to buy, because I play drums as well. I was always told to spend money on snare and hi-hats.
Yeah, right.
else is like, yeah, don't worry about it
Yeah.
so much.
Yeah, and there's these crazy heads now that make everything sound great. They sort of almost auto-tune themselves. I'm still an idiot when it comes to drums, even though I've been playing them since like 92 or something like that. But I have drummer friends who kind of guide me along. So you started electric guitar kind of so yeah, what year was this?
What
92?
90, no, maybe like 93, 94.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a long time ago, I don't really remember, but around
Yeah.
then.
And then did you play in bands and stuff like that? Playing the electric guitar or?
Well, not really. So, my first gig ever was as a drummer, actually, playing in my brother's noise band. Who's depping in my brother's noise band because their drummer was sick or something or away. Couldn't play a gig. It was a good gig, so they wanted someone. So I depped in my brother's noise band on drums when I was, I think I was 14. And then, yeah, I played drums mostly for a long time, actually, until I was maybe, 20 or so.
Okay.
I was always playing a bit of guitar, but mostly for myself because there's less drummers, right? There's loads of guitar players, but there's not much drummers. So yeah, that was kind of an eventually made the flip. But yeah, for a long time I was playing drums in bands.
Do you still play drums? Like with other people or?
Little, yeah. I normally have a sort of kind of, I don't know what you would call it, like a kind of noisy garage punk band called Weekend Death Cult. But I mean, I don't think we've had a rehearsal in about a year, so maybe we don't play anymore. But we were working
Still counts.
until that's the point. You know what I mean? Rehearsing once a year and gigging once a year,
That's enough. Once a year, yeah.
Exactly. It's
Keep
good for
your
Alan.
union card valid.
I kind of love playing the drums. It's really fun.
Yeah, I started playing bass primarily in college. That was the first thing I picked up, but our drummer, we started a band, me and a buddy of mine who played guitar, and our drummer never hung out with us, like on weekends when we were partying. So I bought a really crappy drum kit and I just started like sitting down and playing. And then eventually after college, like the first band after college that we started, that's when I went to drums and pretty much played that, the
Nice.
whole time. But
Yeah,
I'm still not very good though, but
drums are a super fun instrument, man.
yeah. So when did the switch happen to, or like was it a big switch that went from electric guitar and drums to picking up the acoustic, getting into finger picking and American Primitive, or what was that slide like?
It wasn't really a big switch. I mean, I was definitely playing electric guitar a lot in kind of parallel. In fact, it got to a point where I started taking some of these things. I started playing electric guitar exclusively in open tunings because I was sort of picking up so much from playing fingerstyle. But yeah, I guess in maybe like, I don't know, my sort of young to mid 20s, I just kind of got fascinated by it. I was just looking up like a lot of influences of various bands that I like and various musicians that I like. It was a sort of a combination of that, more that 70s, your Bob Dylan, Neil Young, the underground stuff, and then kind of not contemporary, but later stuff, your Nirvana, Pixies, Bottle Surfers. I don't know. I just kept on digging into people's influences, and a lot of I think, and it continues to be true, like a lot of people do reference pre-war blues, right, as a big influence. So I was listening to that and listening to guys like John Hurt and Blind Boy Fuller and Skip James, but he's less in this style, but like that kind of, Mississippi John Hurt, Blind Boy Fuller stuff, who are all using the alternating thumb, like country picking style. And like when I first heard it, I was just like, this is two people, right? This is not one person playing the guitar, this is two people. But apparently it's one person. So I just really wanted to learn to play in those styles. So I started out, playing in standard tunings like John Hurt stuff, and then I discovered open tunings. Like, oh, this is interesting, and started playing in those. And yeah, that was kind of it. I didn't really know that doing this as a solo instrument thing was a thing. I'd kind of found a guitar teacher in Cardiff, where I was living, who was a really great blues picker, and I always wanted to kind of, okay, I want to find someone who's really good at this. I'm gonna like leech all of their knowledge on it. And I sort of showed him, oh, I've been working on these little, because I don't sing, so I'd been working on these little compositions myself that were just instrumental blues compositions in the alternating thumb picking style. And he was like, oh, this kind of sounds like, like John Hurt. Oh, not John, John Hurt. This kind of sounds like John Fay. I was like, who's John Fay? play me some John Fay, and that's kind of how I discovered that this is actually a genre of music to a certain extent. Yeah.
Yeah, I you know, it's funny. I've totally forgot that back when I first started hearing probably John Fahey and stuff like that, I had the same thing, like there must be more than one person playing or it's a multi-track. I mean, I still watch people play live. I'm like, how the hell are you pulling that off? Joseph Alred just played in town like 2 weeks ago, and you know, I like he plays a wide variety of stuff. You know, he's not just American Primitive. You know, he does some more stuff that's like classical based. But man, when you see him playing, you watch his fingers, and I'm like, I don't know how he's doing that. He just sort of blows it off as like, I don't know, I'm just trying to figure it out.
That's great.
So when it comes to when it comes to like the style of music that you play now, who are the other influences that you kind of lean on or draw from? Like Fahey probably is one of them. Are there tunings that you kind of pull from other people that you've or you come up with your own or?
I kind of like to go in my own direction. I like to listen to things that aren't fingerstyle guitar a lot, because it can be too easy just to completely, almost steal. So it's interesting to try and see what it is you like in other genres of music and how you adapt that. So listen to like a lot of, like avant-garde sort of stuff, but, a lot of noise and like doom metal, I don't know, like 70s rock and classical music as well. Like there's, like I always, one of my big references is Satie. Then yeah, you're kind of more avant-garde, like Moondog, and I don't know, I've been listening to loads of Japanese noise recently. I have this sort of, I just want to find the next thing. I'm terrible for, like, I have this obsessive desire to, like, oh, well, I've heard this, it's really good, but I don't tend to listen to the same record over and over again. I tend to like desperately want to find the next record that I've never heard before. So this is like Gong 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 recently. Like that's great. I'm always just doing that. I listened to the record like twice, and now it's in my head. It's like, this is what I do.
Yeah, they're great. That band blows me away. They were playing yeah, they were supposed to play, I think, in Toronto. I don't know if that's happening or not. I just yeah, remembered I forgot that.
Right.
Yeah, what other, I'm curious, what other Japanese noise things are you referencing here?
Don't know. I mean, like an early one for me was I got like when I was super. When one of my earlier gigs was, I mean, I went with my mum. It was Melt Banana. That was a great. I mean, they're still fucking great. I mean, I saw them back when they were a whole band. And now when I've seen them a few times, more recently, and now they're a duo, but they're still somehow really fucking good.
What are they
Yeah, I don't
doing as a
know.
duo? I didn't I'm not familiar. I didn't know
Oh,
they paired back to a duo.
yeah, for a while now, I think, unless they've expanded again. But 'cause I think I have a habit of being really unlucky with gigs where I buy tickets to gigs and then I'm playing a gig, so I can't go. It kind of sucks. I'm gonna miss the Lovely Eggs. I bought tickets to Lovely Eggs, gonna miss them, got a gig. Oh well. No, yeah, she had like a, I think they just got like, backing tracks where she's got like one of them big, trigger pads, and she
Oh, I
hits
see.
them. Kind of good though. It's sort of it's been turned into a show. It's got like waving it around, and like it's got all lights and stuff. It's pretty cool.
They yeah, you know, I was really into the Skin Graft label back in the early mid-90s when it started, following all that, and that's I think that was pretty much the introduction of them to the US was through that label. And at the time that label and some of the bands from Chicago started hitting Rochester. You know, on the way to New York or coming down from Toronto, we're not far from there. You know, we're a logical stopping ground, especially midweek, you know. And a bar in town finally got traction, started doing shows, and Melt Banana came, and you know, a handful of us knew who they were. And luckily, they got booked with, you know, a local metal band. We had at least at that time a big metal scene in town, mostly hair metal, but then good like doom and. You know, dark black metal, you know, death metal and stuff, tech stuff, and it blew those guys away. Like all these metal dudes were blown away by Melt Banana. And then Melt Banana like came They probably played the Bug Jar, at least a half dozen times.
Yeah,
It was one of those final crossovers where the metal scene knew about the noise rock scene or whatever you call Melt Banana,
no, that was great. That was so good. I mean, I remember like when I was like, yeah, I was like pretty little when I think maybe 13, 14 when I saw them. And I just remember the gig being literally like divided in half down the middle of the crowd. Like on the left, it was kind of all the avant-garde art crowd with their slightly askew haircuts and looking like nicely fitting shirts. And on the right, there was just the biggest fucking mosh pit you've ever seen. Perfectly split down the middle.
That's a pretty amazing early show for a 13-year-old.
I had a good upbringing.
My first show was at 13 as well, and it was like Starship. I don't know if you remember. That's Jefferson Airplane, when they reinvented themselves in the mid-80s. Yeah, it was them and Night Ranger, like hair metal.
My first gig is obnoxiously cool though, because it was, I think I was 8 or 9, and it was a Dr. John.
Oh,
It
yeah.
was pretty cool. They were rehearsing near where my dad was working, so he went in and he got me a signed CD. Still have some.
Do you collaborate with other people now? Like I don't know if I've really seen it at all, but do you?
Not really. It'd be nice to, I think the problem is this, like you have to, it has to really, you know, it has to work,
Sure.
right? And it's quite hard. I think I'm a bit like mentally all over the place and like rhythm. I like playing, I don't know, maybe I just can't play in time. Maybe I just like go slower, you know, I don't know which one it is. But I just sometimes find it quite, in a way, constraining sometimes. I quite like just doing my own. It'd be cool if I could find someone who was on that perfect wavelength, but I just sort of haven't really. There's some great drummers, I think, but also they have to be near you, right? And
Yeah,
that's
right.
you have to. They have someone has to be within proximity to you who kind of works in that way. So it doesn't really happen. Yeah, I don't know. And also, I'm not really an improviser. Like I can, but I just don't find
Oh,
it.
okay.
I like composing. I just think it's much more interesting to compose a piece of music that has a very, meaningful kind of journey through it, and it does something quite intentional. I can find improvisation sometimes a bit self-indulgent and kind of noodly, and that's just not for me. Even though I can kind of listen to it, I just can't play it. I just get bored of myself. So I don't know.
Okay. So yeah, your compositions though, they don't have any, there's not really a flexibility in them. It's pretty much
Not really, like little
little.
nuances.
Yeah.
One track which I'll kind of fuck about with a bit because it's kind of simple, but it's got a nice sort of vibe to it. So I'll kind of some when I play it live, I will do things. But generally, no, I like classical music. I like composed,
Okay.
music. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm always curious as to how much like pretty much everything I do is improv. Out of I don't know why. we Pengo kind of started doing that. We started early on as kind of a no wave band, and then slowly morphed into weirdo kind of droney psych and whatever, and we all found, I think, for that, the four of us just played so much together, and we weren't really interested in, I think, composing. But we sort of, like you play so long with the same people over and over that you overall it's kind of composed, right? Like we have a style, we have modes that we get into, we have almost themes that we get into.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean, in a way, though, it's kind of why I ended up being a solo musician was a certain fascism within band rehearsals of wanting things to be my way. So I'm best left alone, really.
Yeah, no, that's fine. That's fair. I was like that when running a we me and a bunch of friends ran an art space, DIY art space, and I got to a point where I needed to be like that, like I needed to be more diligent, kind of drop the hammer sometimes.
Doesn't make you very popular,
Yeah.
though.
How you get shit done, though.
Yeah.
How'd you hook up with Thompson Square for those couple? You have two full lengths and the 7-inch, right, on the label.
It's kind of a weird, it's kind of a bonkers story, really. It was, so I was like playing around Brighton, like literally open mics or gigs that were like one step above an open mic, showcase gigs or whatever, to, not many people. But there was one guy, Simon Owensworth, who's a great guitar player called Dr. Turtle. He's a really good friend of mine now, and we actually have a radio show together in which we play horrible music at each other on Slack City. But anyway, yeah, he because he's a finger style, American primitive pickers. He'd come to the shows, right? And he dug it, and I put out this EP, which I called the Bathroom Tapes, because I recorded it all in my bathroom. And he sent it to, without telling me this, he sent it to Jeff Davidson, who was then at WFMU. I guess he liked it, and he played it a couple of times in WFMU, but then he also sent it to Josh at Tompkins Square. And I
Okay.
guess Josh is kind of a maverick, and if he guess if he likes something, he just goes, oh, okay, I'll put that out. And literally he sent, I was at a gig where I was contemplating quitting music forever because I was so fucked off with the entire situation. And he sent me an email when I was at the back of the gig. I was like, hey, do you want to put a record out? I'm like, oh. And I was a big fan of Tompkins Square. I had a bunch of their stuff. So I was like, okay, yeah, that sounds good to me, dude. And that's kind of how I.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, literally at the gig that you're just like ready to pack it in.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, my buddy Rob turned me on to you. I don't know, it was a couple of years ago at least. After, of course, your LPs s have sold out and aren't getting repressed, and I'm like, ah, come on, repress them. You have a new record coming out, right, in the fall, in September?
That's right. Yeah, September 5th.
Yeah, and what label is that on again?
That's on We Are Busybodies, who are a Toronto label.
Oh, okay. And yeah, they reach out to you, you reach out to them.
Well, no, I saw Eric. He was my North American booker,
Oh, okay.
and I was trying to find a home for this record that I'd recorded in the summer, and I wasn't really finding a good the right place for it. And then Eric sort of suggested, oh, I could put it out, and he's a sound fella, and he puts out some really fucking cool records. So I was like, okay, that sounds like a good idea to me. And they do represses, which was a big sticking point for me. So yeah, just kind of happened that way.
Yeah, so you are coming over to North America around the time of the release, right?
A bit sort of end of November and into December.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Okay. But the record's coming out in September.
Yeah.
And how many shows are you doing? Do you know how many shows you're doing right now?
Do you mean in North America or
Yeah.
generally?
Yeah, North
America.
America.
God, I don't know. Let's
Oh,
check
okay.
the document. No, I just don't know off the top of my head. It's
Are
like
you?
nine. Let's see, one, two, three, four, nine.
Nine. Okay.
One third is Toronto.
Yeah. Oh, you're
Yeah.
playing three shows up there? Yeah.
Cells in New York.
I'm gonna try to come up, and I reached out to him about any dates and stuff like that, and it was pretty much all booked and stuff, which is great, so I might swing up to catch in Toronto. Are you doing shows? You doing shows in the UK and Europe before that, or after that, or?
Yeah, a bunch beforehand. Like I've got tons. Yeah, and still being added. Basically, it's kind of the constant. I like gigging. I like touring. So I'm sort of always poking my booker to like, yeah, go on. Wasn't mate.
That's awesome. What are other bands, or I mean, you mentioned that you listen to a lot of other stuff. I'm kind of curious, as it, like Gong 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 is
I'm like, although it's terrible as well, because I can never remember.
yeah.
I can just remember things. I just listen and listen and listen, because I do this radio show, as I mentioned, with my buddy Simon. And like, I'm pretty into my like, outside of music as well. And that's, we sort of have slightly specialities in what we play one another. And I don't play exclusively outside of music, but I do play a lot of outside of music. So I'm often just trying to find stuff that I don't know. We had, because the whole theme of the show is that it's like fulfilling, you pick a theme, right? So you know, I've done themes with like songs by nuns, or you
Every
know,
show's a different theme.
exactly, yeah. And
You're
then like the
both
last,
following the same theme, or
pick a theme each, see.
each do, okay.
So yeah, the last show we just did, I did songs with animal sounds in, and Simon did tracks by kids that were too good to be by kids, right? You know, so I'm often like just trying to like, and that involves a lot of like scouring slightly obscure record labels and things. But I don't know, like it's hard. It's a hard answer to the question to answer because I'm really, really all over the shop, especially at the moment. Just like totally slamming it. Like listen to songs with once, and they go, "That's a great song," and
Right.
then I graze it away for later.
How often do you do that radio show? Is it weekly?
Once a month, just once a month.
Oh, once a month. Okay. How long? Like an hour or two, or?
An hour, yeah. But you gotta get. I got a big database of obscure, strange categories to put songs in.
I do a radio show on Fridays, in the afternoon for 2 hours, and I find myself not having enough time to listen to music to get ready for it, if I have a crazy week, which this week was crazy because I had this work crap overnight script issue. Now that I know you know the field, every morning I was waking up to like error logs and trying to figure out what was going wrong and what changed in the last 3 days. So.
Like answering Slack messages because we're working with a West Coast American company,
Oh
so
yeah.
like Slack messages are like 7 p.m. Like, leave me alone, I don't work now.
Well, it was great meeting you. Hopefully I can catch you in the fall, come up
Very
to
well.
Toronto for a couple days or something like that.
That's fine, yeah, sounds good, man.
Yeah. Again, it was great talking to you. Thanks a lot for giving me some time. Maybe we'll catch up sometime.
All right.
All
You
right.
have a good rest of your day.
Yeah, you too. Take care. Yeah, I want to thank Gwennifer again for giving me the time. It was a nice, fun, short interview, shorter than normal, but yeah, I think we got to everything. So what you heard before the interview, well, first it was Eric Arn doing Glass on Wet Ice from his Misuse Live in Europe CD on Ramble Records. And then you heard, so this is in Welsh, I'm going to get it wrong, Gwad Am Gwad, maybe? From Strange Lights Over Garth Mountain. That's from Gwennifer's LP on Thompson Square. Then we hear the interview, and then these upcoming tracks that you're going to hear are Deep Sea Diver from the 7-inch on Thompson Square, and the B-side is a track from one of the earlier records as well. But Deep Sea Diver is a unique track, exclusive. And then what you're going to hear last is another track in Welsh, so I'm going to completely mispronounce it. It's Blues Afon Taf. I'm sure that's completely wrong. I should have asked Gwennifer to pronounce it. And that's from her brand new record that came out today. So if you're listening to this on Friday, September 5th, it came out today on the We Are Busybodies label out of Canada. And the LP is called Last Night I Heard the Dog Star Bark. So thanks again for tuning in. This is My Teeth Need Attention. You could check out myteethneedattention.com if you want to check out the show notes. I have links up there to Gwennifer's Discogs and website and stuff like that. She's coming over to the U.S. Or North America in a little bit, playing some shows up in Toronto and then coming over and, Montreal and stuff, and then coming over to the stateside and playing some shows, I think mainly in the Northeast. So check out the tour listing that she has on her website for that, and try to catch her live. I'm going to try to get to one of the shows if I can arrange it. So thanks again. Subscribe to the podcast, tell your friends about it, and you can also check out My Teeth Need Attention on Instagram as well. All right, thanks again, and here's the last two tracks from Gwennifer.